You're listening
to the Thinking Matters podcast.
Conversations
at the intersection of
faith,
culture,
and reason.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Thinking Matters podcast. My name's Nick Blackie, and I'm doing what the other man on this podcast does. Todd Funk is the usual host of the podcast, but today we're doing something a wee bit different. Todd and I are both speakers for Thinking Matters, and I, on top of that, am the camps and schools director as well. But we figured, why not, instead of always finding exterior podcast guests, why not have a few conversations amongst ourselves within the Thinking Matters speakers and go through some of the more foundational apologetics arguments, looking at stuff which is really simple. And we're going to try and make this accessible to the public. And I don't mean accessible to the public in the sense that you can all reach the podcast. Of course, everyone could do that. But I mean, breaking down the arguments so simply that every Christian can understand how to make a defense for their faith. Todd and I are going to be talking about a worldview. What is a worldview, and why does a worldview matter? So Todd, do you have any comments to make before we jump right into it?
No, I'm excited. I think this is going to be something that's very practical and beneficial. And I'm hoping people, especially young people that you see at camps and stuff, are going to be able to use this as a resource for some basics here. So I'm excited to go. And I'm also excited to not have the pressure of coming up with all the questions. That's on you. So ready to go.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's awesome to have Todd being the one getting asked the questions for Todd. You really are a wealth of information and such a fantastic speaker. So it's cool to be able to crack you open a bit more. So let's jump right into it then. Let's start the series, which we might call the Apologetics Basics Series. Let's start it off by laying the foundation with a worldview and talking about what is a worldview. So Todd, if you had to give a definition for what a worldview was, what would you say?
Well, not to sound trite, but it's the way people view the world. It is your kind of interpretive grid that you overlay the way you see everything in life. People have described worldviews as like a pair of sunglasses. Because I do a lot of youth speaking, I actually brought a pair. Everybody's got a pair of sunglasses of different color tint on. And when you wear your sunglasses, you see the world differently. You see them through those lenses. Everything looks kind of dark and hazy right now, you know, smoke color. Everybody has a pair that they're filtering what they're seeing out there. Everybody's seeing the same thing, but they're interpreting it differently because of the lens through which they see. So in a nutshell, kind of the lens through which we see and interpret reality, everything. How about yourself? Ideas on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many fantastic illustrations we can use for what a worldview is, but one of my favorites is the box top of a puzzle. You see, when you're trying to put a puzzle together, you've got maybe 1,000 different pieces that all look different. And the thing which is going to guide you, unless it's one of those Wasgidge puzzles, which is always the front.
Useless.
But the thing which is going to guide you on a normal puzzle is the box top. It's going to show you, when you look at a blue piece, where that blue piece is going to go. Is it a blue house? Is it a piece of the sky or a piece of water? And so when it comes to making observations in this world, whether we're looking at our emotions or scientific data or experiences we've had, those are all sort of pieces of the puzzle. And without the correct worldview or without the correct box top, we're going to get those things muddled up. And so I love that illustration of a box top to show us that every piece of life fits into a certain box top or worldview, but only one of those box tops is correct. And if we have the right worldview, if we have the right box top, we're going to end up with a puzzle which works and pieces which really fit together. And obviously, you and I as Christians, we believe that Christianity is the best box top or the best worldview because it's true.
Yeah.
So Todd, you've lived a longer life than me. What are the different worldviews that you have adhered to throughout your life?
Yeah. Well, before I was going to ask you something, Nick, do you think, I mean, we're religious people here. We're apologists here. Are we the only ones with worldviews? Or, I mean, if somebody doesn't even know what the word means, do you think they have one?
Yeah, definitely. I think every person has a worldview, whether they are aware of it or not. Even people who claim not to be religious have a worldview, right? I mean, an atheist has a worldview. They have a way in which they view the world. And for a lot of atheists, they will view the world through a materialistic lens. They think that matter is all that there ever has been and all that there ever will be. Or even for an agnostic, someone who believes that either it's not possible to know what is really true. I mean, that in itself is a statement about reality. It's a way in which they're viewing the world. And so, yeah, I think everyone has a worldview.
I would agree. We've all got the glasses on. Stephen Meyer says, we don't know that we're wearing them, but we all see the world through them, you know, basically. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, in a nutshell, kind of the big worldviews out there, there's atheism, that there is no God, matter and material. The laws of the universe are all there are. And then you've got kind of the pantheistic worldview. Everything is God. God is the universe. The universe is God. And then you've got kind of a theistic or deistic worldview, such as Christianity or Islam or even Judaism. Those are kind of the big interpretive lenses through which people are going to interpret the world and what they see and the grid they're going to pass through. Unless I've missed any. You think I've missed any?
No, I think that's spot on. And you mentioned atheism, pantheism, theism. Yeah. And I think those are sort of like the umbrella categories for so many worldviews which flow on from that. So
yeah,
within theism, you've got the different religions you mentioned. But within pantheism, you've got a number of different worldviews. And you can kind of imagine it like a family tree where those are the great-grandfathers. And then as you go down the family tree, it breaks off into different branches and eventually end up with your individual final worldviews, such as Christianity or atheism. Okay, yeah. Then, Todd. Well, I asked you a question before. I said, what are the different worldviews that you've held to in your life? Or have you just always held the Christian worldview?
Good question. So I kind of didn't think much about much until I think I was about 11. I received Christ and I began to have and develop a Christian worldview. As a young person growing up, a teenager and stuff, I certainly had a Christian worldview and tried to interpret things from a biblical perspective. Why it matters is you might think, how does it matter practically in your everyday? Well, either you're going to believe there's an objective foundation of truth and objective foundations of morality, or everything's just up for grabs. Oh, it's true for you, but not for me. Well, what you think is moral or immoral is just culturally determined. And so it matters in very practical things. Most people politically vote through the filter of their worldview, the way they see things, right and wrong. And, you know, people on other political sides of the fence, you might see them as evil, but they just see the world differently. Their lenses are different.
Cool. Well,
what about yourself? So, when did you first even know that you had a worldview, or did it dawn on you?
Yeah, no, good question. I was raised in a Christian household, but for me, it was not until sort of when I entered into high school that I really began to question my worldview, not in a way which I was sort of doubting and everything and having a crisis about my faith, but more of a, hang on, I've grown up and taught that this stuff is true, but is there evidence behind it? You know, I always tell people that it was during high school where I started having a lot of conversations with my friends about my faith and sharing with them the different beliefs that I had to them. And it was in those conversations where my worldview got challenged quite a lot, where people would ask questions I didn't know the answer to. And so upon those challenges and questions about my faith, I would go and explore, hey, is there really a good answer to this question? I came out the other side of high school with a stronger faith than when I went in. And since then, I've just been growing and learning. And I think every day that goes by is just more of a confirmation for me as I learn more that Christianity really is the way, it describes the way things really are. It's the story of reality, as an apologist, Greg Kochel.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah. He puts it that way. And so, yeah, I think that leads on really well to another thing that I think we ought to talk about, Todd, which is, what does a worldview answer? What sort of questions does it answer? We've talked about it quite broadly, but specifically, often people will break a worldview into four different categories. Are you familiar with those four categories?
Yeah, I've seen it done in several different ways. Yeah, there's big life questions, aren't they, that everyone is going to ask at some point in time if they're cognitively there, and they're going to answer them depending on their starting worldview premise. And where your non-Christian friends, where did they get their worldview? They didn't have an atheist Bible, did they? I mean, they got it from their surrounding culture. They got it from social media. They got it from parents, got it from teachers. We just kind of absorb a worldview, and it's going to be thrust upon us unless we purposely, actively pursue a biblical worldview. because it's going to be thrust. I mean, even the Disney movies, they portray a certain worldview and a certain point of view. And so we've got to be careful of that. But well, run us through the big questions that every worldview has got an answer.
Well, I think the four biggies would be starting off with the question of origins, which is that question of where do we come from? You know, what is ultimate reality? And that's where we kind of get to. Did we come from evolution? Did we come from an accident? Or did we come from intelligent design or some mystical force out there? So those are different answers to that question of origins.
Yeah.
And then we have
how do those play out depending on the answer you give? Well, I mean, for the atheist that might believe that there's nothing but matter and molecules, I mean, if the universe came from a random explosion, then we really have no purpose, do we? I mean, I'm kind of jumping ahead on that, but I mean, if that's the best we've got, we're just lucky mud, aren't we?
Yeah, well, each of those questions, dependent on how we answer them, you're right, they do have implications for how we live our life. And the value we place on things. In fact, that very next question, one of the four questions that worldviews answer is identity, which is that question, who are we? Is there any more value to humans than there is to a dung beetle? Is there any more value to us than there are to horses and cows? I mean, is there something which distinguishes humans from other living organisms? And so, you know, you mentioned atheism before. If that is the correct worldview, if the way that things are is that we just evolved over millions and millions of years, then the logical outcome of that is that you and the ant that's in your pantry eating your chocolate has the same great, 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 great ancestor.
Sure. And I have no more right to claim that chocolate than the ant does or any other thing on the planet, right? And some people live their worldview that way. They don't want to harm or kill or destroy anything. They place the ant on equal value. That is a worldview choice. And there are certainly consequences to those choices. There are certainly ramifications to them.
And it can kind of go two ways, right? On one hand, you've got the person who says, well, we've all got the same common ancestor. Therefore, us and every living thing, we have the same amount of rights, and they will go to extreme lengths to protect the rights of animals. And look, we're not saying that we don't support, you know, giving protection to certain animals and not abusing them. But then there's the other end of the spectrum, which is saying, well, if I can squash an ant and I'm not in trouble, then why can't I squash a human and not get in trouble? And we've seen the outcome of that with, you know, atheistic dictators such as Pol Pot, who was responsible for the Cambodian genocide. He saw people not as people made in the image of God, but as problems who he could kill and torture. And, you know, we've seen some horribly inhumane things done because at the foundation of people's worldview, they believe that we're just a bit of matter and we don't matter.
Yeah. And most people don't think that far down the track. They don't think through the logical, natural ramifications of a worldview where it's founded and grounded. I'm not like Pol Pot. I would never kill anybody. Well, why not? If you're an atheist with no grounding and basis in morality, then why not? Who says it's wrong? I mean, people look at what Hitler did and oh, he's terribly evil. He was living out. He was the product of a worldview that he had imbibed, that he had digested. And it says, you know, we've got to get rid of the weeds in the field of humanity. You know, no farmer would let weeds grow in their field. They would pluck them out and get rid of them. They're stealing nutrients from your good crops. And so, you know, he first went after the feeble-minded, the mentally disabled and alcoholics and drug addicts and homeless and gypsies and other things. And then it progressed, you know, people of color and then the Jewish race. And, you know, what was particularly wrong with that on an atheistic, you know, humanitarian level? He was trying to do the most good for the most amount of people. Sounds good, but the ramifications, they're there.
And Todd, just to clarify something, because we don't want to give the impression that we think all atheists are like Hitler.
Absolutely.
Or Pol Pot. No. What we are saying is that atheists can be good and do good things, but there's nothing to ground it in the atheistic worldview. There's no objective standard that says this is the right action and this is the wrong action.
And that's typically in the list of big worldview questions. Morality, who decides right and wrong? The individual?
Yeah, that's
the society. Okay, well, there we moved right into it, haven't we? I mean, is it the individual? I think it'd be okay to do X, Y, and Z. Or is it the culture? The Nazis, and there have been several cultures that have thought, you know, genocide and these things, and infanticide or, you know, euthanasia. These are all things the culture decides is okay. So where does it stop? Or is there a divine being that has, you know, put forth some moral law that are applicable for all people at all times, in all places and circumstances? That's a better basis, I believe, a firmer ground. And people, like you said, most atheists are not the Pol Pots and the Hitlers. They live as though there is a universal law and a universal lawgiver, don't they?
Yeah, I was just about to say that even though some people profess to have an atheistic worldview, many people don't live out that worldview to its fullest extent. In fact, a lot of them live, like you say, as if there really is that moral standard, which is why they might be appalled that, you know, we're saying the logical outcome of the atheistic worldview is that human life has no objective value.
Yeah.
And people would go, what? No, that's not what I believe. But when you reason through it, that's the only outcome. And so a lot of people are sort of living with this mixed worldview where they've unconsciously taken some parts of Christianity and some parts of atheism and maybe some parts of some Eastern religions. You know, a lot of people believe in reincarnation or they believe in the spiritual world but don't want to make it even concrete. It's all just quite mystic.
Yeah.
I think people can have this sort of blended worldview taking lots of different parts. But again, going back to our analogy of the box top for the puzzle.
Yeah.
A blended puzzle might have some correct parts, or a blended box top might have some correct parts, but it's going to look pretty disconjointed at the end of the day.
They're self-contradictory in many ways and contradict one another in many ways and can't be lived out consistently. You know, when you treat it like a smorgasbord, oh, I'm going to have some pizza here. And oh, I like Mexican. I'll have a taco here. Oh, an Italian, give me some spaghetti. You know, when we go to, you know, a smorgasbord, and that might work there. A good chef would say, no, you've got to pick a cuisine because they're specifically, you know, designed that way. But worldview, you're right. I mean, you get people that are pro-choice and say, you know, vegan. I don't want to kill any being, so I'm a vegan. Well, yeah, but you don't mind, you know, killing a baby, you know, or, you know, I'm a Christian, but I'm pro-choice. Well, how do those two things marry up? So some things just can't and don't go together. And you're right. Most people are blissfully unaware that when they use the smorgasbord approach, they're sometimes self-refuting and contradictory at their core.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, that's three of our questions for the worldview. We've got origins. Where do we come from? Yeah. Identity, who are we and do we have any value? We've got morality, what is right and wrong? Does right and wrong even exist? But our final question, which a worldview's answer is the question of destiny, which is this question, you know, where are we going? Is there life after death? Is there some final result of this life? And so again, different worldviews will give different answers. What are some of the different answers to that question, Todd?
Well, I mean, it depends on your starting point, your worldview grid. If you're a naturalist, in other words, an atheist that says there's nothing but atoms and molecules, then when I die, like the Lion King, that when they're up on the rock, he says, when you die, you will go and your body will be turned into grass and you'll be eaten by the antelopes one day. And so that was a Disney movie portraying a worldview that we're just atoms and molecule and nothing's going to happen. Your consciousness ceases. If you're, you know, a Christian, you obviously believe that your spirit will move on and you know, go to be in the presence of the Lord where he's going to judge our deeds, good or bad. If you're a new ager, you might believe that you're going to join a collective consciousness. Does it matter? Well, yeah. In, was it 97 in Riverside area where I came from, there was a cult called the Heaven's Gate cult. They believed that there was a comet, a literal actual comet called Hale-Bopp going across the sky. And the universal collective consciousness was part of the tail of that. And to join that, well, they had to kill themselves. And so they did. Some 30 of drank some poison and killed themselves. Now, I know that's an extreme example, but that is an example of a worldview. And, you know, what you believe is going to happen in the hereafter. and how you live. There's Hinduism that has different end of story games. Some people say, well, you just choose your own worldview, you choose your own, and it doesn't matter. Well, I mean, that gets back to the worldview question of what is truth and reality? How do we know it? And I believe there is such a thing as correspondence theory of reality. Things either are or they're not. And so all of those worldviews we just described and, you know, the future of things, they can't all be true. They can all be false, possibly, if we have missed one, but they can't all be true. And there's gotten to be one, but it certainly does affect how you live. If you believe you're just going to go to dust and ashes and that'll be the end of it, then you can skate through life without a moral responsibility if you don't believe that there will be a moral judge of the universe. And, you know, consistently, why not? Get all you can all you get. Doesn't mean it matter who you need to step on or, you know, whatever.
Todd, you mentioned the correspondence theory of reality, or some people call it the correspondence theory of truth. What is that?
Well, the way it's been explained and what I've read is just that, is something is true if it actually corresponds to the real world that we live in and we observe. Those are the things we can call true. And those are the people that would hold that would believe in objective truth. Either the stoplight is red or it is green. Either you have money in your bank account. The postmodernist movement says, well, it could be true for you, but not for me. Everyone has their own truth. I said, no, truth corresponds to reality. Does your box top adequately explain what's actually on the table, the pieces? So I see.
Yeah, and that baffles me how some people could deny that there is no objective truth. I mean, one example, Todd, you're known as a guy who has a Ferrari, right?
Okay, I like it. Is it actually in the garage? Somebody's taking it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, immediately you turn around and look at your garage because you want to see if that statement matches up with reality. I mean, any truth claim that we make, if I claimed that I had a Ferrari, you'd probably doubt me. But if you came to my house and looked at my garage and you saw the Ferrari, you would go, huh, what he was saying was actually true. But if you came in and you saw my 2006 Focus, you would probably be a little bit jealous, but you would realize that I was telling a lie as well. And so that is the correspondence theory of truth. It's the best way to figure out what truth really is. And even the people who deny that there is such thing as truth live as if it really does exist. And we're going to get to that in a second, where we talk about our categories for judging a worldview. How do we take a worldview and analyze what parts of this are true, what parts are helpful? And I think there's three questions that we should ask any worldview. The first one is this: internal consistency. Does it contradict itself? What do you think about that first question?
Yeah, well, certainly. I'm thinking of Marxism. That's a worldview. Everyone's either an oppressor or an oppressed, right? You got the haves and the have-nots. But Marxism eventually turns on itself. Let's say there was a class of society, brown people, let's say, and it wanted to elevate that like Pol Pot did by killing and executed the rich and the educated and all that. Well, pretty soon the oppressed become the oppressors. Right? It's not a workable worldview that way. It contradicts. You know, if you're going to say you're a naturalist and say, yeah, I only believe in the laws of nature and atoms and molecules and stuff, well, one of the first laws of thermodynamics is matter is neither created or destroyed. So you've got to ask yourself, are you looking for a miracle? Are you looking for something supernatural? Because that contradicts your worldview. If things don't just pop into existence from nothing for no reason at all, then you have a problem. If you are a naturalist, that is contradictory.
I think
you can think of any other example that I'm missing. What's that?
Yeah, you brought up one of the clearest examples before, which is postmodernism. And it's as simple as if you claim there is no such thing as objective truth, the only question that you have to ask is, well, is that statement objectively true?
Yeah.
It self-contradicts. And so
that's true.
I think that internal consistency is one question that we ought to apply to every worldview and see, are there certain claims within this worldview that contradict themselves? I think the next one goes back to our correspondence theory of reality or truth is, does this actually fit the facts? When we look at the facts, when we go and make scientific observations and we examine the way things really are they matching up with the world? Or are they matching up with the worldview? Are the things which we're seeing matching up with the worldview that we're claiming? And so I mean, one example might be in the Eastern religions. There are some Eastern religions that believe that this material world is an illusion, that they refer to it as Maya. Mm-hmm. And if this material world, if we make observations that, no, this material world isn't an illusion, that we can actually feel things and we can measure things. Yeah. And things really so.
Well, the way of moving buses and trains, these people that believe that's an illusion. Okay, see how that's going to work out for you.
Yeah, I mean, that's our third question, right? Practical adequacy. Can it guide our life successfully? Can we actually live according to this worldview as if it were true?
Have you heard of Peter Singer?
Yes.
He was an ethicist at Princeton University, and he just made shockwaves when he said that a baby, you know, the doctor should be able to abort up to, you know, 30 days post, you know, post birth, because they don't have any value. He said that an adult pig has more value than a baby, than a fetus. And, you know, he said, unless something can contribute to society in a meaningful way and can be self-aware and conscious of its surroundings, then it doesn't, you know, we can get rid of it. Because it has no value to us. So anything that's defective in the womb or 30 days out, we discover it's got severe Down syndrome, get rid of it. Well, that was all great until it landed right in front of him when his mother came down with Alzheimer's and began to lose her mental cognition. Now, if he were consistent with his worldview, he would have just put her in a home or put her away, euthanized her. But no, him and his sister spent lots of money, a team of doctors, to look after him. After her. And when he was asked about the inconsistency in his world, he said, well, it's real different when it's, you know, comes from your own home, when it's personal. Your very point, isn't it? Can you live this worldview out consistently, even when it's your own mother?
There's a famous, it reminds me of a famous Q&A discussion time for an apologist, Frank Turek, who, if you're a listener of the Thinking Matters podcast, you might be familiar with him. He's an American apologist. And one guy came up to him questioning Frank about Taoism, and you know, I may not have all the facts straight, but it went something like Frank asking, hey, what's Taoism? And then the man responded, you just go with the flow, you go with the Tao, you sort of just live life and take what comes. And then Frank just asked, well, you know, if the Nazis rose up again and started killing people, and you know, your friends were dying, would you just go with the flow? Would you go with the Tao? Would you resist it? And then he said, oh no, I'd resist it. And then Frank said, so you're not a Taoist? And he said, maybe not. So he realized that, wait a minute, if I actually tried living out my worldview, yeah, there's no way I would follow through with it. I would resist. I wouldn't just go with the way things are happening. Yeah. And so I think that third question is an important question for examining worldviews and being
able to... Does it bring satisfaction, you know? It's like... We've all know the stories of people that there's never enough, you know, money and popularity or power to satisfy. But yet the Christian worldview, we see a lot of people that have searched money and power and, you know, wealth and fame and all these things. It's like King Solomon, vanity, vanity, all is vanity, but they come to Christ and there's a satisfaction to their soul. A lot of them can get rid of all their you know, their goods and their money, their wealth and fame, because they've found something that satisfies their soul. And that is a Christian worldview found, you know, in Jesus Christ.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many examples of Christians who have lost everything, who are in prison for being a Christian or being tortured, yet they have joy because they realize true joy does not come from material possessions or comfort, but it comes from Christ and the joy that He gives us when they know that they have been forgiven of their sin.
Yeah. And Christians can live consistently with their worldview regarding, you know, death, future, eternal things. There have been many Christian martyrs that have not flinched in the face of martyrdom, in the face of death, because they truly believe that they're going to be, you know, exist eternally with God in heaven. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, with the atheism, what do you have to offer? You're done. I'd be terrified of death if I was an atheist, you know? Just, yeah. And that's it. My existence, I like life. I like walks and riding my bike and other things. It doesn't offer hope, does it?
Yeah.
The atheistic
one. Well, Todd, we've talked about what a worldview is. We've talked about the different questions that a worldview answers, the consequences of the different answers we have to those questions. And we've talked about ways of judging a worldview. So I think we've laid a foundation for what we want to go on to do now, which is to defend the Christian worldview, is to start talking about arguments for the existence of God or defending the resurrection of Jesus. And so
the reasons we believe that our worldview is correct, right? I mean, we've got to prove that out now. How is it workable? How is it better than the alternatives? Yeah. Cool. What are we going to talk about next time?
Well, I think next time we'll jump into that first topic, which is arguments for the existence of God, right? That's the question of origins. What is ultimate reality? Where did we come from? And of course, the Christian worldview believes that we came from God, the creator of the universe. And so let's break that down and examine if that's true. But that'll come on the next episode where we talk about the apologetics basics. So thanks for your time, Todd. And if you're a listener, we really hope that you guys enjoyed this. If you want to go deeper and look into more of this, while there will be future podcast episodes coming out, there's already a ton which are already out that Todd has done. Thinking Matters is working to create a whole bunch of online resources for Christians. We'll keep exploring, everyone. Keep asking questions. And if you have any questions, we would love to hear from you. Contact us at info@thinkingmatters.org.nz and we can hopefully cover one of those podcast episodes.
We'll be back.
Cool. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Thinking Matters podcast. We'll see you next time.
For more reasons why we believe,
or to support this ministry, go to
thinkingmatters.org.nz.